What is up, everyone? This is Fireside Yankees. I've got myself here, Ryan Garcia. I've got Jacob. I've got Chris. We're all here to discuss what is just another boring week. I mean, this is a really, really slow burn. I didn't think we'd be this deep into the offseason with nothing. I actually have a bet I'm about to lose with a cousin of mine who I said I put $5. The Yankees signed a major league contract before the end of the new year, and we did not count Paul Blackburn. We voided that because it happened like 5 minutes after. So I'm kind of cooked. I might be cooked, fellas. But we'll start with Jacob, dude. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing well. I'm a little bit nervous for the Miami game on Wednesday.
All right,
I'm getting ready for that. I had a good Christmas though. I've done pretty much nothing but rot and watch movies and TV for the last four or five days. But it's been a good time. I kind of needed that.
Chris, how we doing, man? How's the holiday?
Really good, man. Really good. I'm really excited for the Miami football game, actually. Me and Jacob have difference in rooting interests. So I'm kind of just watch some bowl games, watch the Pop-Tart Bowl, which was awesome. But just kind of been patiently waiting for the Yankees to do something, anything, to be honest.
Yeah. We also had a very important date this past between episodes. Chris, it was your birthday. Happy birthday, man. So I want to wish you happy birthday too, bro.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I'm like, what am I, approaching unk status? Is that what they say?
Nah, we're not there yet. Good. Give it time. We're all young. Yeah, we're all young and hip.
What is the official like unk status age?
I think 40.
Oh.
Is that? I have 40.
It's 40. I got plenty of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like 40, 45.
That's okay. That's the range.
I think it's we're seeing some unkflation recently.
Yeah. Unkflation, that's good. That's good. Dude, people keep telling me like that 30 number is when you start to
People be calling you unk when you're like late 20s now, and it's like, all right, you gotta relax.
I get called unk by my little brothers, and I am 6 years older than them.
No, like, you don't know the world. Unk is supposed to be like a you have wisdom type
thing,
from what I understand, and we've devolved it into anyone who's older than you is unk, and it's like, all right, man, it should be a term of endearment rather than an insult about your age.
I agree, and I also
Why I love you, man. That's why I love you. Thank you.
I also say I think we're so sports-pilled with age, where it's like you think of it like, oh, this guy's near the end of his career. He's 34, 35. I was like, it's not an old guy at all. 34, 35 is not old in the slightest. So
I think the funniest one ever was like when Madison Bumgarner was like 30. It was just like the most like 70-year-old, 30-year-old man of all time.
Yeah.
It was like there's some of these guys, some of these big leaguers, once they get to 30 plus, it's like you know, like they feel like that unk status when it's like really it's like you're like early 30s. You should be that's a young man still by normal standards, but
it doesn't Garrett Cole feel unk to you guys though? Like Garrett Cole feels like unk to me.
Yeah, he's taken on like the kind of pitching coach role with this injury. So I think he's got this air of wisdom about him that a lot of players his age haven't had. So he's kind of like the CC of this team now, the old CC of this team.
Yeah, I think there are older 30-year-olds like that. That sounds really stupid, but there are older 30-year-olds. Like you can't tell me. As you mentioned, like Madison Bumgarner and like Max Fried, I don't think they're the same when they were 30. Like I do not look at them the same. Trying to think of some other baby faces in the league that I can off the top of my head. I don't know if is there a standout baby face that's like 30 or 31 in baseball right now.
Let me think about that.
Because I think Ben Rice is a baby face, but he's 26, so it's a little different.
Like I don't see like Cody Bellinger's what 30 now.
31? Yeah, he's gonna turn 31 in July,
and he doesn't come off to me as someone who's. Like, I don't know. I guess it's because he came up when he was so young. I don't really see him. He's been in the league for a while now, and he's in his 30s. And I don't really see him as that, like, elder statesman in the locker room.
Yeah, well, that's totally fair.
School's 29.
Yeah.
Shit. That's, wow.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
That's crazy, dude.
Yeah, we're gonna pay him $400 million next offseason.
I hope, man. I freaking hope. But for now, you know, Bellinger, as you mentioned, is the Yankees' top target in free agency. I think that's been reported 50 million times by anyone who has a social media account. John Heyman dropped an interesting article where he talked a little bit about the Bellinger market. He mentioned two things that I found interesting. The first is that Aaron Judge is pushing for a Bellinger return. Now, I don't think that's, like, different from – like, I saw a lot of people saying, why didn't he do this for Soto? I'm sure he did it for Soto. He just didn't contact Soto directly, the same way he's not contacting Bellinger directly, most likely. But the more interesting thing is that the Yankees don't seem to be that threatened by the Mets, and they seem pretty confident that he's going to come back. So, Chris, we'll start with you because you're the birthday man of this podcast. How do you feel about that report? Like, how much do you buy it? How much do you think it might be, like, you know, a little bit of leverage talk, a little Boris talking through Heyman kind of stuff? What were your vibes from that report?
I think that the timing of it maybe has Boris written all over it, but, like, the least surprising report for this weekend was that Aaron would want Bellinger back, right? Like, that kind of fits the bill of what Aaron likes. Like, it's familiar. I mean, there was the reports that Aaron pushed for him to, you know, get to New York the first time. So Aaron wanting him back is cool, but it doesn't really mean anything. Like, we always hear, you know, every offseason about who Aaron wants and, like, who Aaron got back. Like, Aaron wanted Goldschmidt, Aaron wanted Verdugo. Like, we always hear about who Aaron wants. And it's cool. It's a cool thing to kind of, like, hit the heartstrings of Yankees fans to get them to kind of apply pressure on the New York Yankees, but it's not surprising to me at all.
Yeah, I mean, I've made jokes in the past about, like, how the guys judge Juan. It's like the Le GM type thing in basketball, where when it's like, when people, LeBron fans, be like, oh, he didn't have the team around him. It's like, well, LeBron built the team. People do the same type of thing with Judge, but it's like, it's really, I'm sure he has some influence, but at the end of the day, it's Cashman's call. And of course, he's going to want Bellinger back. Bellinger was a really good player this past season, and I'm sure they're friendly. Bellinger's also from California, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they probably have, like, yes, a similar type of upbringing in the sport in Cali. So I'm sure they're boys. He wants them back on the team. And at the end of the day, it's not going to matter. Like, it's more of a waiting game with Boris, right? Like, it's not going to matter what Judge wants right now. We're not going to go up there and meet Boris where he is when he's so far ahead of what Bellinger's actually worth right now. So we're going to have to wait it out. I'm sure this weekend, when stuff finally has to go down with Okamoto and Amai, we'll have a better idea of where guys are going to go. But the market is held up right now on that. No one's going to go and jump the gun on Bellinger at whatever 7 years that he wants right now. So we might have to wait another few weeks at least for him.
Yeah, and I'll also note with this report, first and foremost with the Judge thing, as Jacob noted, this is not abnormal. This is not some abnormal advocacy from Judge. I'm sure that if the Yankees told him, hey, we want Kyle Tucker, we're going to pay what it takes to get Kyle Tucker, he's not going to go, nope, I want Bellinger back, you can't do that. I think there's a line that's been kind of blurred with how people view Aaron Judge's influence. I think the Yankees listen to Aaron Judge more than the median team listens to their best player. But I do not believe Aaron Judge makes decisions. I do not believe that Aaron Judge alone can make the organization trade for or sign a player they do not want to sign or trade for. Can he give his stamp of approval? Do I think they maybe come to him and say, hey, like with Alex Verdugo, let's say, hey, this is a guy who's got a questionable reputation across the league, off field, hustling, clashing with his manager. Do you think you can take this guy in? Do you think you guys can handle him in the clubhouse? I think that's a question he gets asked. And I think that is where a yes or a no could alter their pursuit of a player, but I think that's a rational way to do that. I don't think that's anything that's out of the ordinary. And then in regard to, like, the Yankees not being threatened by the Mets, I personally believe that, and I could be wrong here, I don't think the Mets are a team, and I've said this before, that are going to suddenly change their mentality or philosophy with these 30-year-old position player free agents, go from, we're going to be disciplined on Edwin Diaz, 3 years, nothing more. We're going to be disciplined on Alonso. We're not even going to make an offer once it gets past that 3-year window. They're not. I don't think they're going to go from that to, we must give Cody Bellinger 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, 26, 27, 28, 29 plus million dollars a year. That feels like if David Stearns wants to make that mistake, I am okay with the Yankees letting him make that mistake of choosing to be undisciplined with Cody Bellinger versus every other position player free agent they have had the opportunity to sign under David Stearns.
I think all of these teams are too disciplined at this point. There's not going to be, it's not the same league it was 10 years ago where a surprise team would come in and meet Boris at his number and surprise the whole league. So it's definitely a waiting game. Everyone wants this number to come down first before they finally start offering. And people, even with there's a report recently with Imai, how Imai doesn't have any official offers on the table. It's probably the same thing, where Imai has a window that closes on Sunday, and the leverage that the teams have is that he has to sign by Sunday. So no one's going to go up there and meet him before everyone else. No one wants to make that first offer, because then Imai will pitch that offer to everyone else. It's going to be a bit, it's going to be a madhouse the last couple of days to determine where he ends up going. But no one wants to be in there early to get one-upped or to overpay where no one else is up at right now. So it's a big waiting game. And also, it's going back to the Judge thing about Judge bringing in guys. You think about the guys the Judge has brought in over the years, right? Like, he's a huge fan of Rizzo, and he advocated for the Rizzo extension. I mean, Rizzo was a good fit. You look at Verdugo. Verdugo was the guy we brought in as maybe someone we could teach to pull fly balls and hit home runs to the short porch. And then, like, all of these guys had Goldschmidt. We needed a platoon guy that could hit lefties and play first base. All these guys, there were reasons besides Judge to want them on the roster. And it's not like he's going out there and saying, sign, I don't know, Eric Sogard and play him at second base because he's my boy. Like, these are guys who there's reasons to think that they would fit on the team. And Judge is just maybe that final push to, we want this guy. I like this guy as a person. He has, like you said, he has a good character. And even though people didn't see Verdugo that way, Judge advocated for him and maybe relieved some of the worries about him. And obviously it didn't work out well, but as we saw...
LeMahieu, throw LeMahieu in there also. He's a big LeMahieu advocate.
Yeah. And like, even with Verdugo's the one who worked out the least, right? And we saw with him in April of that year, he hit really well when he was pulling the fly balls. So there was reasons to believe in these guys, like, process-wise. It's not like we're throwing process out the window to let Aaron Judge build his team the way he wants to build it. So I think that's a little bit been overblown maybe in the last few off seasons.
And I'll also say this, and Chris, I kind of want to get your perspective on this because I think this is not just a baseball thing, but also a thing you can say in football and other sports. Is it fair to say that, like, when you're a great player and you're with an organization for a while, You just have more say. Like, you just have more power in these things. Am I crazy for saying that?
No, you see that in football a lot. Most time with, like, quarterbacks have, like, a ton of say. That was kind of one of the Aaron Rodgers things. He was so frustrated, like, all the other quarterbacks around the league were, like, getting say except for him in Green Bay. Especially, like, when you are the best player on the team. And I wanted to ask you, Ryan, it's like, I know you said that, you know, in comparison to, like, other players in the league, they don't have as much say as Aaron. But if you look at other best players across other sports, it kind of lines up with the amount of say that he has. Like Aaron Judge, yes, like, best player in the Yankees, so, you know, he's going to get more say than other players on other teams. But the best player in the sport, he gets similar say to the best player in basketball for a bunch of years. Well, I mean, LeBron was ridiculous, so, like, he got all the say in the world. But, like, you know, best player in football, like, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, like, all those guys got a good amount of say on who kind of got extended, especially on the O-line and on the wide receiver spot. So I think that, like, it kind of matches up with, you know, best players around the sport, other sports, how much say they get.
It's funny because in basketball, it's a little more, I think they're a little more liberal with that. Like, mm-hmm. Jalen Brunson, for example, is clearly not as good relative to his NBA counterparts. And I feel like I'm the one who can appropriately say this because I'm wearing a Villanova hat. I'm a diehard Knicks fan. I tweeted out I would let Jalen Brunson, like, I would be okay with Jalen Brunson rear-ending me and it being his fault, and I would never call insurance on him. Like, I love Jalen Brunson.
Crazy.
That being said, he's clearly not as good relative to his sport as Aaron Judge. It's not close. If the Knicks are going to trade Josh Hart, they're going to ask him. They're going to be like, hey, we're going to trade Josh. Like, are you cool with this? I'm sure that's a conversation at least being had. Like, are you cool with this? Or at least a heads up, hey, we're trading your boy. With the Yankees, I don't even think it's a matter of, like, again, as I think it's so much, it has so much more to do with this is the guy who controls your clubhouse and has controlled the clubhouse. And look, I'll say this too. They've taken in some, like, notoriously loud or disruptive or, you know, I don't want to say the word lazy, but guys who have those low effort plays, and there haven't been a lot of issues in that clubhouse. I think of Verdugo and Stroman. They brought both of them in the same offseason, and Stroman never really had, like, incidents with the Yankees. He never really had, like, moments. Am I remembering anything or not remembering
Stroman
anything?
Stroman seemed like a great locker room guy. It seemed like people liked him. Mm-hmm. And, like, I guess people didn't like that he was vocal on Twitter. I feel like he kind of toned it down a little bit with us. Maybe he was older, but I don't know. But what you're setting me up right now for a Brooklyn Nets rant, which no one wants to hear.
No, please.
But going back to the player, like, players influencing the roster, like, for as good as Aaron Judge is, like, if this was the NBA, Aaron Judge would be bringing in whoever the hell he wanted to fill out the roster. I think of the Nets when they had the big two at the time. It was just KD and Kyrie. Kyrie Irving got Kenny Atkinson fired from the Brooklyn Nets because he didn't want to start DeAndre Jordan over Jared Allen. And Jared Allen was twice as good as DeAndre Jordan sucked. He was terrible. He could not move. He had zero on offense. He was an okay rebounder. Not even a good defender because he was so slow and lazy. He couldn't even switch on the players. It was terrible to watch. And then Kyrie throws a tantrum and freaks out when he wants to start Jared Allen, who's a much better player. And then Kenny Atkinson gets fired. It's like Aaron Judge is never going to have that level of influence over this roster. It's just not how it's not how the sport works structurally. So, like, even if he advocates for a guy, he's never going to really be upset about not getting a guy that he wants if the cashman in the front office doesn't believe that it's worth it to get that guy. So the times that you do see him bring in players that he likes, and the times it's reported like that, it's going to be because the front office was interested in the player and Judge was interested in the player. It's going to be a mix of both.
I'll also point out in all of this again, like the Yankees, because I want to emphasize this because I've seen a lot of this discourse on Twitter. I know I've mentioned it already, but I am 100% confident in saying Aaron Judge did the same thing for Soto. I am about as confident can be that when the offseason hits next year, he'll go up to Brian Cashman and Hal Steinbrenner and say, hey guys, can we bring in Tarek Skubal? Is that a thing we can do? Can we, like, I would love, like, this is what we need. Because look, guys, this is not, like, again, this is a guy who's aware of his surroundings. I'm not saying he's a GM or GM-esque. I personally don't believe that because of some of the things he said about average and RBIs. Like, clearly he can't run a baseball team, but I'm pretty sure he didn't go, I don't want Soto back. Why would I want Soto back? Like, I'm 100% sure that did not happen.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing, because he's the captain of the World Baseball Classic team this year, and he's kind of calling all these guys up for Team USA. He's going to be playing with Skubal this March, so there's going to be a bunch of interesting connections he might be making just as a teammate for a few weeks there. So who knows? Maybe he'll have some real influence on this Skubal decision this offseason. That'd be great.
You could argue the 2023 World Baseball Classic is why Japanese players soften their stance on playing with each other, because I think it has been like noted that Yamamoto and Ohtani and Sasaki, like, they became boys playing on that team. Not maybe boys, but, like, you know, they were like, oh, this is fun. Like, we could do this in the big leagues. Like, why not? Because if people forget, like, 2 years ago, this was like a, they're not going to go play with another Japanese player. They hate doing that. Like, that was the narrative, that Japanese players don't like playing on the same team as other Japanese players. So I wonder how the World Baseball Classic changes some things. Hopefully, in the Bellinger market moves, because I'm bored. I think we're all just bored.
Yeah,
can I ask you a question about the Bellinger market, kind of bigger picture thing?
Yeah, please.
Is this the year where the league is finally pushing back pretty aggressively against Scott Boras? Like, is that what we're seeing right now?
I mean, that happened a few years ago. When Bellinger first hit the market, it was the same type of thing. It was Bellinger and Matt Chapman that offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And they both ended up settling for, like, the 1+1+1 deals. And they ended up both being productive. So it looks like they're both going to make good money long term. But it's also gotten to the point where Boras is never going to get that Prince Fielder 9-year $240 million deal, or whatever it was. He's never going to get that deal again for a guy who's good but not elite. So I think Bellinger falls kind of into that camp. Yeah, I think he's a more versatile player than Prince Fielder was, but Prince Fielder was like, he hit like 320 with like 35 homers every year, and he got that big deal back then. If he hit the market today, based on how teams operate, based on how teams understand value, especially at the first base position where he didn't play very well, he would never get that deal. And he waited very long. I think it was like late January when Prince got that deal. That would be a situation where he'd be waiting into February and then finally settle for something else, which is kind of what ended up happening with Chapman and Bellinger. And even that, I think, like, Matt Chapman's probably a better player than Prince Fielder was, and he never, even with that second extension he got, it wasn't as big as Prince Fielder's deal. So Boras is going to have to adapt to the league right now. I don't think this is I think this happened a few years ago where this became the case. But it's definitely it's not the 2010s anymore. It's not the 2000s anymore. Like, it's a different environment now for sure.
It's like Boras is chasing ghosts right now. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think that's – Boras doesn't have any reason to come down to the team's numbers right now. Like, he could still be chasing it until – He does until he's back.
Well, it feels, you know, it's funny. Maybe not so much with Bellinger, but I more have this sense when I think about like the kind of the Japanese players right now, because he thought he was going to get some big deals for those guys, and it feels like those markets are kind of evaporating, and like no one's budging. Like everyone's feeling okay. Like look, we're going to get Boris to blink first. And that kind of hasn't really been a thing. And I know Boris has been the thing where like the superstars that he has always get paid. Like that's always going to be the case. But he did a good job for the last like 6 years and making sure those like tier two guys were getting paid like megastars as well. And it feels like that's kind of evaporating. That's what this kind of off season is kind of shaping up to be. It kind of happened last year a little bit with Bregman and Alonso, but it just feels even more so now.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think the Pete getting that contract is probably the best he can do with that type of play. He's still. Is Pete a Boris guy?
Yes, he became a Boris guy.
A year ago, Boris said, I want to get him the Prince Fielder deal. And it was like, you're tweaking out. There's no way he's getting that deal.
I think that's the best he could do with Pete in this environment.
Okay. I also think he took advantage of an organization that needed to prove it could spend.
Yes, well, Baltimore was all in on Schwarber, and then when that didn't happen, they basically offered the same deal. So it is definitely that. That's probably the case. And I think Boris, he wants to try to do... I'm sure that's going to happen with the Tucker situation. Whoever's out on Tucker, if he holds Bellinger back and waits until Tucker signs, whoever's out on Tucker is going to offer probably something that they're going to have the space and the budget to offer Bellinger more than maybe he's worth. And I don't know if anyone's going to budge on that. If it's like the Blue Jays probably, if they lose out on Tucker, they're probably not going to go all in on Bellinger. But who knows? Like, Boris doesn't have incentive to go and meet a team before Tucker signs at this point, in my opinion. So
the best player on the market not being a Boris guy is like such an like I can't remember the last time that happened.
I guess it would be 23 because Yamamoto and Ohtani were not Boris guys.
Fair.
And they were Ohtani, I will say this. I believe that just like with Sasaki, Ohtani had no genuine intention of signing anywhere else other than the Los Angeles Dodgers. The negotiation was a formality to get that's my opinion on that. But Yamamoto, I think Yamamoto for a chunk of that free agent process was at least open to the idea of not playing for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And it was after Ohtani signed and once that kind of went through that Yamamoto's perspective might have shifted on that. I don't know.
It felt like he had real interest in both the New York teams that year, but I guess just like the idea of playing with Ohtani and
the best organization in baseball.
Yeah, you play for the best organization, and you're playing the idea of if you're from Japan, you're playing with Ohtani. If you're not a guy who wants to be in the spotlight, like obviously Yamamoto is a big, huge name, right? But if you're playing next to Ohtani, there's a level of pressure that's alleviated off of you because you don't have to be the guy representing your country. You're just one of the guys representing your country.
I will also say, and I think this pertains to the pitching market too. I think it's a good way we can start bridging to that. That we're just seeing that teams and agents are just in this standstill. And unlike before, people are comfortable waiting. Like, I think there's just more comfort that players and organizations have waiting, not having a complete roster on December 29th is less of a pressure builder than it would have been maybe 5 years ago. And when it comes to these players, not having a home is fine. Like, it's not really a bad thing right now. So I think it works both ways.
You know what I think started that was the Bryce Harper deal.
Yes.
The Philly deal. What was that? It was like February. Because I remember he was on the MLB The Show cover, and he didn't have a team at the time.
And both those contracts, Machado, not the second one, but the first one, are plus contracts.
Yes,
everyone in baseball, if they could go back in time and offer $5 million more a year, I think would do it to sign those players. And I will say for the three-year players, like if you want to kind of – like let's go crazy retroactive here, or in terms of like retroactively saying this could have happened, that could have happened. What if the Yankees waited like another month instead of signing Stroman? They might have ended up with Blake Snell. What if, I don't know, another team waited a little longer on Bellinger? Like, he's not a great player, but he was better than a lot of the first basemen and outfielders out there.
I think about even just last year, you saw like Kikuchi signed very early with the Angels for like 3 years, 63 something million. And then at the end of the offseason, like it was, I remember in February, Nick Pivetta signs with the Padres for like 4 years and $50 million. And his draft compensation involved with that, so it's a little bit different. But you got probably the better player for more years and less money. And it's like there's incentive to wait sometimes if you're the team, because you can end up with those deals at the end. So it is kind of a dangerous game that Boris plays, where he tries to get the best deal possible and wait out as long as possible. But if we're the Yankees, right, and we're looking around, Tucker signs with, I don't know, Toronto, and the Mets figure out their outfield situation, and Bellinger doesn't have a home. If Bellinger's without a home in late January or early February, maybe they're going to have to come to us and say, all right, we'll settle for that 5-year or 4-year, whatever we want to do, if there's no market for him. So I think there is no reason to be worried about Bellinger right now at the end of the day. And if you want to get into the pitching market now, we could talk about it.
Yeah, and I also think when it comes to Bellinger to wrap this year, I don't think the Yankees need Bellinger as bad as they need they need pitching. I think they need pitching more than they need Bellinger specifically to fill an outfield hole. And I think this is, as we start talking about the pitching market, I think when it starts, it kind of starts with Tatsuya Imai, where he doesn't really have a market that's defined. The three teams that looked to be the most into him a month ago were the Phillies, Cubs, and Yankees. Jack Curry took that Imai dream and kind of shot it in the head. The Cubs are still in, but a lot of reports like, yeah, they're lukewarm, but they're in. So being in is at least something. It's a leg up over the Yankees in that. And the Phillies, they haven't been pulled out of those sweepstakes, but you look at their payroll and it's like, how much money are they going to be willing to offer Imai, knowing they still have to bring back Realmuto, knowing they may have some other, you know, things. Their outfield sucks. Like Justin Crawford, Brandon Marsh, and Adolis Garcia might be the worst outfield I've seen a contender throw out in quite some time. I think the Yankees, even if they have concerns, because the industry has concerns, it's not a Yankee-specific thing. The whole industry has something on Imai, clearly, or multiple things on Imai that keep them from being that in. The Yankees cannot rule themselves out. If they have ruled themselves out, I think that is an unwise decision because you have no idea what he's going to sign for. I remember Imanaga, the whole thing was the fly balls. He's going to get killed in Yankee Stadium. And he signed a very cheap contract, and you ended up signing Marcus Stroman. And had you signed Imanaga to that contract instead of Stroman, you would be a better team. For 2 years, you would have been a much better team. I don't think the Yankees need to force a signing of Imai. There are trade targets out there. There are other free agents. I don't really think they're going to go after any of them, but point is, they need to remain opportunistic here. I kind of want to get your guys' perspective on that.
I agree 100%. I think I've been saying it kind of the whole time. I think it's a situation where for the last like 3 or 4 weeks, we've kind of seen the smoke and fire die down with the Imai to the Yankees stuff. But if he's without an offer as this week, he has to sign by Sunday. I think it's like Sunday at like 5 p.m. or something. I don't know the exact time, but he's capped. He has less than a week. By the time we're recording next episode, he's going to be on a team. So we just saw with Murakami, people had him projected for nine-figure deal and he ended up signing for 2 years, $34 million with the White Sox. I think there's going to be a lot of teams that come out of the woodwork if no one is up in that nine-figure range for Imai. A lot of teams are going to come out of the woodwork and say, hey, I got this offer for 4 years, $80 million, something like that. And at that point, I think we're going to have a leg up on that level of contract because we're the Yankees, we have great pitching development, and we have offer a really good chance to win. So if that ends up being the case where he's going to sign for something similar to what Imanaga signed for a few years ago, I think we should definitely be in, and we should definitely do a little full-court press at the very end of the before his clock runs out. So that's my take on this.
Kind of same spot. I mean, when we talked about it the first time, what did we say? We would kind of cap out what we would want for him at like $160 million. And like right now, it looks like the market's going to be like maybe under 90. And so like if it becomes a thing where it's like us versus, you know, the mid-market team, so we never get to bid against, I love our chances there. And again, that's like opportunistic. But, you know, we're the Yankees, so we're so used to like kind of spending with the Mets and the Dodgers that it's okay, like we're going to have to pony up huge money. But if it becomes a thing where it's like under $100 million and he's available and desperate and we've got Boris right where we want him, like absolutely, like I'm kind of in that same boat, which is why I think patience is going to be rewarded here.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in the camp that if he signs for under $100 million and it's not with us, I'm probably going to be mad. Like I'm probably going to say there has to be something really bad that they don't like about him, that either with the projections or with something off the field, or they just messed up and they didn't get a guy that they should have gotten, because under $100 million seems like that's worth the gamble twice over for a guy who could be a really good number two in the bigs.
I mean, when we first talked, even I think you, Jacob, likened the least out of all three of us.
Yes,
we were still all in agreement that like $150 million was kind of like similar where we would cap it. I think I went a little bit higher. I went like 170. So I think we all like were okay with the idea of him. At least, I mean, 130 to say the least. It's like, if you can get him for $40 million cheaper than that, you absolutely have to go. Which is why I think, like, I think this is a case where Boris is going to end up blinking first here, right? Like, he has to because he can't afford to be patient here.
He also can't go, like, he can go back, yes, but he requested to be posted a year before he would have been eligible. It's a really bad look to do that and then go back. He's
probably
going to sign. And that's
like the culture
thing
that, like, that's like a real, like, frowned upon, like, not quite, you know, right. Welcome back kind of thing.
Yeah, he's going to sign 100%.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind he's playing in MLB this year, so.
There are going to be opt-outs in that deal, too. He will want opt-outs. The team will want opt-outs. I will go as, like, under $100 million if it's, let's say, 4 years, $80 million, opt-outs after 2 years. Team can decline, and then club options, whatever. Like, some messy situation. I don't know how it would look exactly, but you can get out of the contract after 2 years. The pitcher can get out of the contract after 2 years. Similar to what Shota Imanaga did. If that deal is not signed by the New York Yankees, and it is signed by some other team, dude, like, he could be in the dugout, like, putting down, like, junk food and smoking pot or whatever. I don't care. I don't care. He could, dude, the guy could be ordering boxes of fucking pizza to the dugout, chowing him down, putting maybe a beer back in, you know, having a little relaxation time. He could do whatever he wants. As long as it's not criminal, abusive, all that stuff.
He let his translator bet on sports for him.
He can do whatever he wants, dude. Whatever he wants. As long as it's not abusive, a criminal act, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because at $80 million for 4 or 5 years, whatever, maybe you want to lower the AV, fine, whatever. That would be Hal isn't trying to build the best team he wants for this
like,
year.
My issue, if it ends up in that range, that's perfect range for like the Orioles to sign him. And it's like,
that's perfect range for everybody.
If Baltimore signs that guy at 4 years, $80 million, I'm like, shit, Baltimore looks really good right now, and they have a really high ceiling with that rotation. So we definitely, if it gets down to that, we cannot let another team beat us out unless the team that beats us out is bidding a lot higher than we're willing to go.
If I gave you guys $20, it was like, all right, bet on what he'll get over under $100 million. What are you taking? The under or the over?
Taking the under.
I'd still probably say the over. I think it's going to be a little bit into the nine figure range.
Dude, I think
he's going to get years still.
I think he's going to be right around 95.
I think he gets six. No, excuse me. I think he gets 5 years, $85 million, which is lower than the projected number. Opt outs after year two. Like, he can leave the contract after year two or opt out after year one. And this, by the way, should not deter any team because there's no draft picks involved. But the team can, like, decline the opt-out by adding a year or whatever. Something weird where the team isn't taking that big of a risk. The player can get out of it before he turns 30, which is something he might can do by even waiting 2 years. It has to be built and constructed in a way where it's beneficial for the team and the player. And I ultimately believe he ends up with the Cubs.
You think it's basically going to be the Imanaga deal?
Yes. And the Cubs are going to sign him, and I'll be very upset because it'll be a pretty affordable contract. That's where I think we're pacing towards. Like, they've done this in the free agent reliever market. There have been a couple of good reliever contracts they haven't handed out. They're not paying for a pitcher. No matter how good the contract is, they are not paying for a pitcher. They're not.
Mai is a little bit younger than Imanaga was, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's why I think 5 years instead of four, I think it was.
I think my prediction would be like 6 years, 120. And then maybe with like similar type of deal where there's opt-outs after year two or three. And then it could be void. Same thing as like what we just did with Cole, where you could void the opt-out and add an extra year, something like that.
I would also say in regard to the Imai, at 6-120, I want it stated here, I would not be upset at the Yankees. Because if the industry does not, like, this is not a Yankee-specific dislike where it was with Imanaga. Like, the industry also didn't really love Imanaga because he was predicted for, like, $85 million. He ended up getting 53. So I'm not going to be upset at the Yankees for betting the way that 29 other teams bet or 28 other teams bet. I will be upset if it's affordable, right? Like, I think that's where, are we all in agreement there? We're like, if it's a nine-figure commitment to a player you really don't believe in, like, I get it. You wouldn't. Why? Why invest $120 million into a guy?
If there are concerns and it gets up to that $120 million range, then I understand. But if it's under $100 million and you have that type of ceiling. I just don't, I can't see why it shouldn't be us.
And I also will say, in regard to all of this, when it comes to the pitching market, the Yankees can't strike out in the pitching market. Look, if you want to say they struck out on Bellinger, they brought in Austin Hayes, that's what they did because they didn't want to go up to that, to a, like a 6-year, $150, $170 million for Bellinger. Fine. Cool. Understandable. I wouldn't treat Bellinger as a must-have, must-get-back, must-pay-at-all-costs player. This rotation in bullpen is a must-upgrade. Do not, can't give me the, well, you see, when Matt Blake does this with that guy, no. No, you see, I think people overstate the value of pitching coaches. Like, just because you have a really good pitching coach doesn't mean you can give him, like, slop and ask him to produce World Series caliber, top of the league caliber. The Yankee pitching staff is not good enough relative to other contenders to feel good about this group. I would rather them overpay. I'd rather them trade too much to get a starter than do nothing. They're a contender. They're not a rebuilding team. This is a contender with Aaron Judge in his 34, age 34 season. If you've got to do more than you're comfortable doing to acquire somebody, it's better than doing nothing. This is not a group that's good enough to do nothing with. And the situation they've put themselves in is a little bit scary because if they trade for a starter and presumably have to trade for a reliever as well, that is going to be pretty difficult to do without really wrecking the part of your farm that is valued, which is like the top 8 or 9 guys. Outside of that, there's not a lot of depth. There's not a lot of like, ooh, you know, they've got that 10 to 20 range is full of some really plus players. It's more of that top 8. That top 8 is really desirable. There's some fun players outside of that, but they protected that top 8 at the deadline. They're going to have to raid into that part of their organization to get better on the pitching side. How do you guys feel? What's like your confidence meter if they go out there and they get pitching? Chris, I'll start with you.
I'm out of like 10, probably like a 6 maybe. It's just been so weird because it's been so quiet. I mean, I really want them to get pitching. I think there should be at least a little sense of like urgency to get some pitching. But at the same time, like we just discussed about like how being patient kind of could work here and how teams that have been patient it's kind of been successful. So I'm pretty confident they're going to add a pitcher. But, you know, it is kind of weird watching this. I mean, God, it's been like such a slow offseason. It's been slow.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely think they're going to go and find their guys. They're going to try to find guys that they could get value out of, right? Like, I don't think they're going to go out there. But I like Sir Anthony Dominguez. We all like Sir Anthony Dominguez. I don't know if they're going to go out there and sign him for probably 2 years, $20 million, whatever it's going to be. Because he's pretty much the only, like, good multi-year reliever left on the market right now. So it's going to take a competitive offer to go get him. And I don't know if we're going to pay that guy that much money when he has never shown the ability to command the baseball the way that we want him to, I guess. He has in the past. He's had some good years in the past, but he has serious concerns about his command at this point. And I don't know if we're going to give him that much, if we're going to commit that much money to that guy, knowing that he has that flaw. I really like Justin Wilson. I've been saying this. I think Justin Wilson had a fantastic year. Obviously, the age is scary, but that also means he's going to be cheaper, probably a one-year deal around $5 million. And I would love that, especially because I've been banging the drum for a lefty breaking ball thrower for the last few years. So I'd love Justin Wilson. I don't know. There's probably some trade target out there that they're looking at that projects really well with Matt Blake. But I want to hear your thoughts, Ryan, on which guys you think we're going to go after for the bullpen specifically.
All right. So there's Angel on my shoulder and Devil on my shoulder. Angel on my shoulder tells me keep calm. It's December. Devil on my shoulder tells me I've just got a very deep fear about how much spending power they have in the trade market. But trade-wise for relievers, like, I mean, there's the Rockies guys, Victor Vodnik and Seth Halverson, I think is how you pronounce it. They throw hard. Their strikeout-to-walk rates aren't great, but they're Rockies pitchers and old-regime Rockies pitchers. This is, like, the lowest of low-hanging fruit on the planet. Like, you could very realistically just go, he's on the Rockies. He played in Coors. Of course he wasn't great. And Vodnik was actually good. He just wasn't great. That is like low-hanging fruit, sure. I think that the Yankees making two deals with the old Rockies regime is not going to make them like more likely to make a deal with this new one, but it was interesting that the old Rocky regime, which was notoriously trade-averse, started making trades. I wonder if that was an ownership, kind of like relenting a little bit of that, like, all right, we can blow this up a little bit. We suck. I think that if you look at the Royals, they've got like some arms that could be available, but I'm not sure anybody like stands out to me. I think as Jacob mentioned, it's going to be somebody who I just can't think of off the top of my head. I'm not really worried about the bullpen in the sense that they, like, trading for a reliever isn't that hard. And they, there are like 30 guys you could feasibly trade for in my mind that aren't going to be put out there in trade talks that I would go, yeah, that's my eighth inning guy. Cool. But it has to be an eighth inning guy. I don't want no, oh yeah, you know, we'll plug him in like the fifth inning, throw him in some low leverage and we'll see if it works. No. He's got to be like plug and play April 2nd. He can close the game. If David Bednar was pitched 2 days in a row previously, that is the kind of guy I need on my roster.
I think Jose Ferrer would have been that type of guy, but then he ended up going for Harry Ford. So that price is up there. That's an expensive trade for a reliever. Even like that, this is a guy who a few years ago probably would have flown under the radar more, but now that everyone knows how to evaluate pitching talent beyond ERA and saves, it's tough to get that type of deal on someone who has really good under the hood numbers.
I will also say with the starting market's where I'm concerned. The starting pitching trade market, I think it is incredibly stupid that the Yankees have looked at the trades going down so far and have gone, we need to lean into trading for a starter. That is so stupid. I'm sorry. And this is not a Cashman thing. This is a Hal thing. If you see the trade market as an owner of an MLB team in a contention window who has not won a World Series championship with Aaron Judge, who might go down as the most talented right-handed hitter to ever play the sport of baseball, how can you not sit back and go, okay, let me meet with my GM. Like, yo, it seems going to take a lot to trade for a starter. I don't want to sign a free agent starter. If we can avoid it, it would be nice. But please take these opportunities to me because we clearly, like, this is going to be difficult to pull off.
I got a question for you.
What's up?
How would you feel about, like, a Chris Bassitt?
Nah, doesn't cut it for me. This guy needs to be able to take the rock in game two of the postseason. Bassitt doesn't cut it for me. He's also, the pitcher he was last year is fine. Like, if you told me he's going to do exactly what he did last year, I'm not thrilled, but it's better than what you currently have. The issue is, he's already seen a velo drop. I have no reason to do anything other than say his velocity is only going to drop further. I have no reason to believe his stuff will not get worse from last year.
Yeah, so the only real options we have on the free agent market, in my opinion, are Suarez and Valdez beyond MI. So it's tough. It's a tough situation, right? Do you trust Zach Gallen? Do you want to pay draft compensation for Zach Gallen? Like, I don't. I don't want that.
I don't. And I want to clarify, I don't love these starters. I'm not saying that Brian Cashman needs to sign one of these guys, but I want them to actually be opportunistic. They have not been opportunistic on the 3-year opt-out guys. They have not been. They weren't interested in Bregman. They weren't interested in Snell. They weren't interested in Chapman. They weren't interested in Alonso. Understandably so, in Alonso. I'm not really upset about that one.
So bad.
I did too, and I think it's really dumb they didn't go after the guy. I think it's dumb. Like, they didn't have
a
third
base.
Did they
not go after? Because he's also a Cali guy. I think there's a good chance he just wanted to, if he was going to take that deal, it was going to be near his hometown.
But they weren't in. Like, they were not in. That was like, well, they were not in. They were not in on Bregman. They are not. They never let themselves be opportunistic on these guys because usually it's, well, you know, he's going to come with that 110% tax. Like, who cares, dude? You're the freaking Yank. It's 1 year. It's a 1 year deal. Like, if Valdez is willing to sign a three, and I don't like Valdez. I've made it very clear. I do not like Framber Valdez. If he's willing to sign like a 3-year 100 contract or like a 275.
I think the issue with that is if you're going to give them the short term super high AAV, does that take us out of Scooble next year?
No, because he can opt out.
But what happens if he has a bad year and you're stuck with the contract?
Shit, dude. Gotcha.
And shit, you're out of school. So I think that's the reason you look at the guys you're going to spend a lot of money on this offseason. And there's no one that really jumps out as worth it, right? There's nobody that, like, maybe Amai. If they like Amai, then Amai would be worth whatever the spend is. But besides him, and it seems like we don't really love him, I don't see anyone who's worth it right now. So I think the trade market makes, if you think you can go out and get a Mackenzie Gore and turn him into if you could turn May Mackenzie Gore into full season Mackenzie Gore, the value of the trade would be worth it to this team. Especially if you go spend money in left field, you could trade Dominguez and a few of our big time starting pitching prospects for Mackenzie Gore and turn that guy into a full season pitcher, not just a first half pitcher. That's probably a much better value than whatever you're getting on the free agent market. And then it leaves you with more financial flexibility next offseason.
And I don't disagree.
Then you might build a mega rotation with Scooble and Gore on top of the guys who we already have. So I definitely think I understand the frustration with the missing out on some of these guys in the past. But no, there's nobody right now that jumps out to me as a must sign on the free agent pitching market. So I think that's why you're seeing a little bit more involvement on the trade side of things.
I don't disagree. It's not that I want Valdez to be playing. If you ask me, like, and something like reasonable for Gore, not saying like completely reasonable, like nothing of note. I'm just saying like there is, I think, a perceived value Gore would have in this league. If it's that value, if it's nothing crazy insane that you would go, what the hell is this organization doing kind of trade? Yes, obviously prefer that over Valdez. I'm just saying what I cannot stomach and what I hope is not the case is that not being able to pull off a trade means no, we're not even opportunistic in the free agency. I would rather them do something stupid to get a starter than do nothing to get a starter. That is the when you're in this specific window with this roster, the ages of everybody, I would rather you end up with a bad Valdez contract than end up with no starting pitcher. And I know people are going to scream at me, well, when you get Cole and Rodon back, when? If. Word should be if. If you get them back, if they're as good as they were before, if everyone in your starting five stays healthy to start the year, which never happens,
yeah,
then maybe, just maybe, you might have a really good rotation. But that takes so much going well. I think this rotation's I don't even think it's like a place they can improve. I think it's a genuine weakness. They don't have depth beyond it. At least in entering, I think it was entering 24 is one of the like weaker on paper rotations without injury, because it was Cole. Like Rodon's reputation was in the shitter after 23. Cortez's rotation was in the mud. Heel ended up making the rotation because of the Cole injury. I mean, that rotation was awful on paper to a lot of people, yeah, but they had depth. Like Heel and Warren could fight out for a rotation spot. Weaver was considered the seventh starter. Like the Blackburn of this roster was Weaver. Imagine the Blackburn of this roster being your eighth starter. Blackburn's your sixth starter, and you have no minor league pitcher who's ready to compete for a job right now, I think.
I think this is why I'm kind of like interested in Bassett here, because if you don't want to overpay for someone like Mackenzie Gore, Bassett's made 30-plus starts in each of the last four seasons. He really hasn't. He hasn't missed more than five starts since before COVID, and he was still pretty effective. Like, he's not a guy. Obviously, the velo being down is concerning. He's 37 years old this year. It's not a guy who you want to sign to. Like, he probably gets a 1+1 or a 2-year deal at a pretty high AAV. So I understand, like, there's concerns with him, right? But in terms of reliability, he hasn't had to have elite stuff to get these outs. If you want him to be a 4 or 5, I think that's totally reasonable. And if that's if that contract makes more sense than going out and signing someone like Valdez or Ranger Suarez, and if it makes more sense than paying an absurd amount of prospect capital for Mackenzie Gore, then I could see a world where we circle back to that. So I'm not totally out on him. I don't think we need to go out. Like you said, I think the depth is more of an issue than the top of the rotation at this point, because if you look at the playoffs, right, obviously you have to assume health for this. If everyone's healthy, you have Fried is the one, then either Rodon or Cole, 2 and 3, and then Schlittler, 4. That's a pretty good playoff rotation, assuming these guys are healthy. And what you're going to say is you can't assume these guys are healthy because two of these guys are currently hurt, and then Schlittler's added like 7 miles per hour of velo the last few years. Who knows how his arm's going to hold up? But it's like that's a risk every team takes. So I think having a guy like Bassett, who's been established as an innings eater type of guy, who's probably going to be a 2-WAR pitcher, high 3s, low 4s ERA. I think that's the type of guy who, if I want to spend a short-term contract, a short-term deal on, it's going to be him over someone like Valdez, who's going to cost $35 or $40 million a year on a short-term deal versus maybe $20 million on a short-term deal.
Chris, if there's a starter you could pluck out right now, free agent, trade, realistic, who are you pulling down, and what are your thoughts on kind of discourse Jacob and I just had?
Yeah, you know, Chris Bassett went to he's from Akron.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
Wait, time out. You mean to tell me I can get a guy who is from the same area as one of the greatest human beings to ever exist?
That's
part of it. I'm putting that as a pro. Being from Akron is a pro. I'm sorry. It's a pro.
Yeah,
am I wrong for that? No.
Dude, the Chris Bassett thing is awesome just because obviously he's like, I think he went to Akron. He's from this area. And it'd be like, you know, last year, Brubaker, he went to Akron. So as long as we get like some sort of Akron presence on the Yankees year over year, like, I'm in. Like, we're not going to get Amai because I know Amai's not from Akron. Give me Bassett.
What I will say for Chris Bassitt is I'm pleasantly surprised to look at an above average strikeout to walk rate. Like I can't lie. I'm a sucker for strikeout to walk rate. I'm a sucker for expected FIP. Like I think these are the metrics you look at.
Something interesting. I just looked at it now. He pitched out of the bullpen this year in the playoffs, and he was really good out of the bullpen. He had like 25% strikeout minus walk rate. Like I know you're salivating a little bit looking at that. Come on now.
I am. Look,
obviously,
at the end of the day,
it's a very small sample, but the fact that he's not one of those starters who you can't put in the bullpen because he doesn't have enough stuff. He just showed up in the playoffs this year and it was did very well out of the bullpen. So the idea that he could start for us all year as a 4 or 5, and then if everyone's healthy, he can go out of the bullpen in the playoffs and pitch in some leverage spots. And if not, he could take that third or fourth starter role in the playoffs. I'm compelled by that. And it's going to come down to the price and the year. If he wants more than 2 years, I don't think that's viable. But if we get to like late January and we're still without an extra starter, I would give him a call.
I would say it's better to get Bassitt than nothing, but I would be a little bit let down if that was our guy. Like, I'd feel like, you know, it'd be like...
Really, I'm definitely talking myself into it a little bit right now, but
I would tell you
it's
that...
It's not flashy at all, but I think it fills the depth need that we have right now.
I'd give Cashman a pat on the back for it. I would look at Howe with, like, disgust and be like, dude, you do it again. You did it again. You disappointed me once again, because that's, again, love-hate relationship with the guy. Don't know how I feel. But, you know, as we start kind of winding down here on the pitching conversation and the pitching market in general, the overall inactivity, I think with Bellinger, can we all kind of agree, like, it's not really a worry. Like, I'm not worried about the fact that Bellinger's not here. I'm not worried about the offense really that much right now. Against lefties, yes. Against righties, they've got 9 guys who I project to be average to above average. I think that it just, they're one, like, they just need that one move to kind of get it going, I think. Like, I don't know if it's signing Bellinger. I don't know if it's trading for a starter. Probably signing Bellinger, that might give you more flexibility to trade for a starter, or just getting an outcome on Bellinger. It just feels like they needed that one thing to start going. I would be okay with them doing something to take themselves out of Bellinger, to do something with the pitching staff, but there's nothing that stands out as that, right? Like, there's not like a player you're going to sign. Again, we just talked about Framber. I like Framber as like a 3-year all opt-outs. I don't like it as a sign him to whatever he's asking for right now. Like, I'm not signing Framber Valdez to a traditional 5-year contract. So they're kind of just like, I don't think they're waiting on Bellinger as much as it is that there's no financial pivot you can really make off Bellinger before he signs outside of Tucker. Well, yeah, that would be my pick, but they're not going to do that either. So I'm not like upset with their strategy as much as I'm like, they need to do something. That's where my head's at. There's the devil on my shoulder, the angel on my shoulder. The devil's like, screw these guys. Angel on my shoulder's like,
yeah,
give it time.
I think everyone's going a little stir crazy right now, because it's like, you see, especially because our division's just been like adding guy. Everyone in the division's adding people right now. Even like the Orioles, they just signed Zach Eflin, who I was like, oh, 1 year, $10 million. I would have done that. It's like, that's a little bit disappointing to not get that type of starter for depth. But I want to be frustrated with the team, but then I think of the big plans, right? The guys who I really have wanted going into this offseason. My plan has either been Tucker or something like Bellinger and Gore as the main pieces. And all those guys are still on the board. So it hurts. I think the big thing right now is the bullpen. There's really only a couple of guys left who are viable in the free agent market. So it's a little bit scary to go in with as weak of a bullpen as we have right now with so few options remaining. So in terms of worry, I think the bullpen is number one on my list. But the fact that there are starting pitchers available via trade and free agency, and there's the left field is really the only position I'm worried about on offense, and the top two left fielders are still there. I'm not really that worried. I'm probably like a 4 out of 10 on the worry meter, and most of that comes out of having a weak bullpen. So I want to hear your guys' thoughts on that too.
I think where my worry is at is pitching in general, and I think they're pitching. I think the issue is there's too much good PR about their pitching staff. Like, we need, like, hit pieces. Like, I like that Chris Kershaw started, like, throwing that into the fire a little bit. Like, dude, I need, like, a John Heyman hit piece. I need a Joel Sherman. Like, we need to throw some hit pieces out there. That pitching staff is a disappointment every postseason.
I mean, to be fair, if you had Rodon pitching with bone spurs this year, that's not, like, a crazy, risky surgery, right? Like, removing loose bodies.
We say that, but that ended Zach Britton's career. Like, Zach Britton's career died the year he got
bone spurs. Didn't he get Tommy John as well? Like, he had other stuff. It wasn't,
could lead to other stuff.
No,
I'm just
I don't
saying
think it leads to it. I think
no, I yeah, but it could happen. He could just not be the same.
Assuming Rodon is healthy next October, I think he's going to be better than what he was this October. It's tough that he's getting older. He's losing some velo, but I think he's the type of guy who in the past has shown the ability to turn up that velo when he needs it, and he couldn't do that this year because he was hurting so bad. So I think they're definitely banking on Rodon coming back a little bit stronger than he was in this October, which is maybe it is a little bit risky, but I don't know. I'm not that concerned, especially because there are guys like Mackenzie Gore still available to us.
No, I agree on the avail. I need hit pieces out there. Like, we too much good PR because the offense, again, everyone's like, the Yankees are running back the offense that led baseball and runs scored. What the hell, guys? Oh my God. It's like, they led baseball and runs scored. We got people thinking Ernie Clement's better than Jazz Chisholm because of fucking 18 games. Like, this is the dumbest discourse ever. Sorry, Chris, I'll let you go because I'm
no, you know how it is. Dude, I feel like this pitching department has the best PR staff ever. So they've just done a great job making sure that they're all good. No, definitely some concern, but like I like Jacob said, I'm going stir crazy. I'm just waiting.
It's the crazy just waiting. It's I think the fact that we're also just it's also the fact that it's like we're used to early action and then nothing in January. Like, that's usually how it goes for the Yankees, and that's not what's happening right now.
Yeah, I do want to say too, like I said, when Imai's window closes before our next episode.
Yeah.
When that happens, Imai and Okamoto being off the board will cause things to move. Because at that point, you'll have the other starting pitchers' markets will become more fruitful. And then once everyone knows where the starting pitchers are going, that's when the Tucker and Bellinger market's going to heat up. So I think there's going to be a domino effect starting this weekend when those two guys from Japan sign. And it'll cause a lot of big moves to happen across the course of January. So hopefully by this time next week when we're recording, we'll have some big moves. Even if it's not Yankees related, we'll have some movement in the market and we'll have a better idea of who we're in on and who we're out on.
Yeah, again, I hope that we end up seeing some action. I'm going to not bet on – clearly, I'm a bad bettor because I've got a crisp $5 bill that I'm going to be handing to my cousin on our New Year's Eve party. When the clock strikes midnight, I'm assuming I'm handing him that $5 bill. And, yeah, I mean, nothing ever happens, FC. What a run. What a run they've had to close out this year, man. I mean, it's incredible. It's truly incredible. Any final thoughts, fellas? Anything you guys want to add on before we wrap up here?
Well, speaking of betting, bet on Miami to cover 9.5 points on Wednesday.
Chris, I sure you have a response to that?
Take the Jeremiah Smith over on yards.
My college football betting advice is that if you've lost your last 8 bets, you're statistically due to win your next one.
Yeah.
That's just odds.
You were never wrong, Ryan. You were just early.
Yeah, don't actually take any betting advice from me. I'm a horrible bettor, number one. And number two, that advice is actually, mathematically speaking, there is no, just because you were wrong 8 times in a row does not actually mean you're going to be right the next time. That's not how it works. It's the same percentage. Point is, go do whatever Chris or Jacob said, even though they might contradict with each other, betting-wise. I would love to see if that hits. The covering, Miami covering and Jeremiah Smith over on yards.
Miami's
I would love to
not
see if
covering.
That ends up covering.
Miami's not.
Or ends up hitting.
Dude, you guys were rattled by Indiana's defense. Our defense is close to that level.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
They're not.
Mesidor and Bain, we're going to be giving Julian Sayin nightmares.
You Miami Friday. Fans shock me every trip. Okay, who is your defense as good as good as Indiana's?
No.
Okay.
So but it's top five.
Top five in what?
Top five in college football. Oh, he's pulling up the numbers now. Oh, no, we got to cut this thing.
You know, I'm a little disappointed. I thought JMU
was
going to win it all.
That's not true. You guys were struggling with A&M's offense. Or A&M's defense, excuse me. You guys struggled with A&M's defense.
We held A&M to 3 points.
I think you were struggling with A&M's defense. A&M also held you guys to 10 points. A&M's defense is horrible.
So? I'm talking about our defense. That's all I care
about. I'm talking about, here we go, Ryan.
I'm talking about Julian Sayin.
Look, Carson Beck versus Matt Patricia is the baby versus the hydrogen bomb. Like, we've got you on wax, on ice, all that.
Yeah, we're gonna feed Mark Fletcher 40 carries, and he's
should have been a Buckeye, man.
Down your throat.
Man, cut the pod, man.
All right, you guys can check out Fireside Inc. is on all of our social media pages, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, this YouTube page. We have a Patreon as well. Links to everything will be in the description. Make sure to check out EmpireSportsMedia.com for written coverage on the Yankees and all of your favorite New York sports teams. And make sure you guys check out the description as well, because the description box will include And That's Baseball YouTube channel. And it'll also include Chris's YouTube channel as well, because I'm sure that whether it's going to be a Miami victory or a Ohio victory, that there will be a lot of interesting content to come out of that. So we appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll see you guys in the next one. Peace out, everybody.
Perfect.